Last weekend, I traveled to Parsippany, New Jersey for the spring edition of the ToyCon NJ Toy and Collectible Show. ToyCon began in June of 2014 and was the brainchild of promoter Phil DeMario. Phil ran the Wayne Toy Show, a monthly toy event held at a local firehouse in Wayne, New Jersey. And in the months leading up to ToyCon that year, I remember Phil stopping me at the door to the Wayne Show to hand me a flyer and to tell me a little more about what he had planned. The new show would be on a scale unlike any other toy show in New Jersey. It offered a lineup of vintage collectible vendors that went beyond filling a small room at a firehouse and would fill two massive gymnasiums at the Police Athletic League in the town of Parsippany. The notable Wayne vendors, like Comic Book Men's Robert Bruce, would be there. But it would also feature a variety of dealers Phil had met along his decades of collecting and promoting. As a vintage Star Wars collector, I was thrilled at the prospect of what a show like this could bring to my home state. The small Wayne show had afforded me numerous opportunities to add carded and loose Kenner figures to my growing collection in the years leading up to ToyCon. But with a show of this magnitude, the possibilities of finding special pieces seemed endless. And the thought of what could turn up kept me energized and excited for weeks. My first ToyCon experience certainly lived up to the hype, and was one I'll never forget. A collector who had a basement filled with decades of toys chose the inaugural ToyCon as the place to sell parts of his collection. I picked up 5 special carded figures from him. The first was probably one of my best finds ever, and was an unpunched 1985 Power of the Force Luke Stormtrooper for $250, which later graded at an 85. I also purchased a 31B Empire Strikes Back Leia Bespin for $65. And when I returned to his booth later in the day, he made me a deal for a trio of carded figures. $200 for a Yoda on his debut Empire Strikes Back card, a Power of the Force carded Barada, and a Power of the Force carded Amanaman. My final purchase of the day was a pristine loose blue Snaggletooth figure for $175. That haul made me a ToyCon fan for life. At the 2015 show, I picked up a collection of mint loose Power of the Force figures complete with their accessories. For $300, I became the owner of a Luke Stormtrooper, a Han and Carbonite, an R2-D2 with a pop-up saber, an Imperial Gunner, an A-Wing pilot, an Imperial Dignitary, and an Endor Luke. And I also brought home a few carded Return of the Jedi figures, including a Leia Bausch for $50 each. In 2016, I purchased a loose Boba Fett figure for $20. It was the nicest example I had ever seen in person, and to my utter shock, it graded at a 90+. I sold it a few years later for $1,000. And I had also scored a carded 31A Empire Snowtrooper for $175. This one is particularly desirable and is very hard to find in good condition. I also sold it, which I now regret, but was able to fund another purchase with the $1,200 sale. In addition to getting a carded 41A Dengar for my run, the 2017 show was memorable as it began a special modern haul for Clone Wars items. And in 2018, I purchased over 60 carded Clone Wars figures, paying only $5 for each one. I found an original carded release Shae Vizsla from the 2012 Vintage Collection for $40 in 2019. And I also picked up a beautiful Kenner Empire Strikes Back TIE Fighter pilot with a clear bubble and on its debut card back for $300. Eventually, Phil passed control of the show on to promoter Joe Viteri, who has headed ToyCon for the second half of the decade. Joe continued what Phil began and has kept ToyCon a destination toy show for collectors in the tri-state area. In 2020, with the specter of the pandemic looming large over toy shows and public gatherings, ToyCon moved temporarily to Wayne, New Jersey. It remained there for the next 2 years at a Police Athletic League center very similar to the one in Parsippany. I continued to add to my carded Power of the Force run with an A-Wing pilot and an Imperial Dignitary. And at the 2021 show, I landed a series of Marvel First Shot prototypes from the era of the early 1990s Toy Biz line. And I also added to my modern Star Wars prototype collection and original art runs through friends at the show in recent years. And while pickups were very special over the previous decade, what made ToyCon truly memorable were the moments spent in the company of our friends and fellow collectors. The show soon became more than simply a toy show for many of us, morphing into a Star Wars Collectors Club meetup, complete with a group lunch, or a trip to a collector's home afterwards. But when we were at the show, it offered us something precious, the time to connect and to converse with those we met at the shows and through the hobby. In the last 10 years, I've attended every ToyCon weekend except for one, and when I add up the total time spent there, it's not measured in hours, but in days. And as a Star Wars collector, ToyCon has had an impactful role in my life. This is a look at the Friday night setup for the spring ToyCon NJ weekend. This is a look back at 10 years of ToyCon. And this is Star Wars Prototypes and Production. For each ToyCon NJ weekend, the show runs 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. This year, I attended the Friday evening vendor setup to help my good friend Pete LaRose arrange his 2 tables of vintage and modern memorabilia. In the days leading up to the event, it hit me that this show was essentially the 10th anniversary of ToyCon NJ. I arrived feeling reflective, recalling some of the great moments and memories from previous events. I also felt appreciative for having had the opportunity to travel to Parsippany for the show in the early years, and then to Wayne during the pandemic, and to return to Parsippany last year and this year. So I'd like you to join me during the Friday evening setup. We'll have a nice long conversation with Pete about what he brought to this show and hear his perspective on how to have a successful weekend at ToyCon as a dealer. And we'll reminisce about the times we've had together as well. And as we tour the gymnasiums, I'll share some of the memories I have from past events over the decade. So make sure you have some money with you in case you see anything you need for your Star Wars collection, and don't forget your vendor badge. Let's celebrate 10 years of hunting toys and building friendships at ToyCon NJ. Okay, it's a little after 5 o'clock, and I'm doing my first walk as people are setting up. So far, there aren't too many vendors that are completely set up, and there really are a lot of tables that are empty as of right now. People are going to be coming after work and coming a little later, and there might be even people setting up tomorrow. But it'll be interesting to see how this show is compared to the December one. The December one, it had, to me, a different selection of vendors that we've had in the past, and I was really surprised to see as well what they brought. ToyCon NJ has been known as a vintage toy show for a long time, and
but is it something this, that was, has, like, shelf life?
This was the first time where we really started to see a lot of more modern items and a lot of non-toy items. But it's busy enough for the first hour, which is nice. I'm not seeing a lot of Star Wars items yet. Although I do hope to find something before I leave. at the shows, as I've mentioned in the past, there have been a lack of vintage Star Wars toys. Toy-Con wasn't bad. Toy-Con just happened a few weeks ago, and you know, there was enough there, but we're still not seeing the selection of, say, vintage carded figures that we've seen in the past. And so I hope that changes for this Toy-Con. It's amazing to think that I've been coming here for the last 10 years, and you know, some of the vendors that started here are no longer with us, sadly. Some have moved on as well. And we've had a lot of newer, younger vendors come in with different setups. And so that's been interesting, too. It's been interesting to follow the trends as well and to see what's popular, what's selling. Here, so as I enter into this second gym, which is where Pete is, there are maybe six tables that are being set up right now, six different vendors. And Pete's been working on his selection. He's got a pretty nice table so far. Right now, his table, his shelves feature some of the Super 7 figures, which I've never really seen before. I always equate Super 7 as being the smaller 3 3/4 inch figures, but these are larger. These are probably more like 6 or 8 inches. And they cover everything from the Turtles to some of the Disney properties like Alice in Wonderland and Robin Hood. Fantasia covers the Silverhawks, Thundercats, G.I. Joe, Animaniacs. And he also has the Super 7 Thunder Tank, which is incredible. It's the box alone has to be, I think, 2 feet long. And so we're slowly setting up his two tables. That's going pretty well. I'm noticing, though, a trend immediately that we're seeing a lot more modern items, very recent ones, recent releases that people probably were able to purchase and were able to get them at wholesale, and they're putting them up for sale. But we're just not seeing enough as far as the vintage items, which is frustrating. However, I just came upon a table. Nothing is set up, so I'm just standing here staring, but there is a Darth Vader case, and anytime I see a Darth Vader case, and of course one of the knockoff space cases next to it, and another collector's case that says for most GoBots and Transformers, I'm always curious to pick them up and look at them, because you never know what you'll find there. However, the person who these belong to is not here, so I don't want to do anything until I see him. But otherwise, it's pretty quiet. I'm hoping for a little more vintage, hoping to find something before I leave today. I see Pete, so I'm going to go tell him about something that I've seen that I think he might like. I think this is the first time I've been to set up in this location. Because during the pandemic, they had moved the convention over to Wayne, New Jersey, which is where the monthly convention is. And this is a much larger show. It's, you know, two full gymnasiums. Probably the largest toy show in New Jersey. Definitely as far as it, you know, when you're talking about things like vintage collectibles, it's always had the reputation of being really the show that carries the most as far as vintage. But again, I don't think I've been here for setup. I went to the setup in 2020 for the Wayne show when it was in Wayne during the pandemic, and that was really nice. I don't think I'd been to a setup before that, the day before. This one's interesting. I think, you know, because during the pandemic, the setup was happening a lot of times, maybe, you know, 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon to start. So really by the time you come in for 4 o'clock, you would see most of the tables would be set up. This started at 4 o'clock, and now that we're 2 hours into it, we're still really, especially in the second gym as I walk in, there are very few tables that are really set up. It's Pete's booth. The gentleman next to him is setting up. The gentleman across from him is in the process of setting up now. The gentleman in the corner is setting up, and you know, maybe a few around the edges, but we're really lacking right now. It'll be interesting to see how many vendors come in tonight as opposed to just getting here tomorrow and setting up, depending on what they have. I haven't run into any close friends yet. I don't think they've arrived. Our buddy Art Lou was supposed to be here, but I don't think he's coming. Mark Huckabone, who is well known throughout the collecting community, is going to be perched next to Pete's table. So they'll be helping one another, and you never know, Mark sometimes brings some really nice Star Wars proof cards, and he just pulls boxes out of his warehouse, and you never know what's going to show up. So that's always interesting. I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow. We're supposed to have a really severe storm, so that might keep me away for the first time in a long time. But I'm glad I got to come today, you know, just to help Pete out and to take a tour of it. So I think we're probably going to be here until 8 o'clock when it closes. And hopefully there are enough vendors that set up that I might be able to snag an item or two from my collection before I leave. But I'm still buzzing after picking up the Count Dooku first shot from the Clone Wars back, I believe that was the end of February at ZoloCon. And I can't remember if it was the beginning of, I think it was the end of February. But that was great. So if I don't get anything today in the next few shows, I'm totally fine with that. Getting that one piece really made my year because it was something that I needed for my run. So, but this is quiet. Usually, you know, when you come to a setup, or especially the morning of the show, there's a bustle that just, it seems to just not stop. And for right now, it's just, you know, the vendors are taking their time. They're arranging their shelves and displays. It's interesting to see what people have here too. A lot of people have brought shelves. Others have brought these sort of cork boards or the boards that they can line the walls with holes and then put in the, you know, the different peg hangers as well too. One gentleman has a setup of that type of wall along with shelving, and he's done a really nice job on it so far. And he has a little My Pet Monster sitting on the top of his collection. There's a gentleman in the corner who has, talk about some really amazing vintage stuff. Let's see if I can walk over there. So the gentleman in the corner has a Batmobile that looks like it has to be from maybe the 70s, maybe even the 60s, and a Batman helicopter. He has an amazing Spider-Man adventure kit and Batman color forms that look like they're from the 80s that are still sealed. A Matchbox motorway, which I think is, I'm going to say it's probably from the early 70s. So he's got some great pieces. I think they're going to draw in a lot of attention. He also has a number of the boxed Star Wars micro collection from the very early 80s as well, too. The Bespin Freeze Chamber, a Hoth playset, and then I believe it's the Bespin Control Room. Yeah. So, again, it's always nice to see those types of pieces. I think anybody coming in is in for a treat. We're starting to get a few more vendors now, so I have a feeling between now and 8 o'clock, I'm hoping that 50% of this room is fixed up. I'm going to step outside for a second. It's the back of the building is facing a highway, so it's pretty busy over here. It's not terribly cold. It's an overcast day, which for March is, I guess, it's pretty normal. We've been having some great weather so far. So to have it be a little cold like this is not too bad. We've had days in the 60s, even going up into the 70s over the past week or two. So I'll step back in here into the gym now. Okay, I see a 12-inch Chewbacca in the box. Not in great condition, but it is complete. And it looks like it's either still sealed or at least still complete in that box. There's the Ghostbusters Firehouse. Always nice to see an original one of those. But this is really what it is. And I mean, you can hear it. There's some music playing. But other than that, it's pretty quiet here. And so Pete, I think he's just pricing some of his items now. And everything looks pretty solid. So for the 10th anniversary, I wanted to try to recall some of the memories that I've had here at the Parsippany Police Athletic League Youth Center. It consists of two gyms, and the gymnasiums are pretty big,
And then there's also a room off to the side that they usually use for, I believe it's slot cars. And then there's a hallway for, I would say, the first 5 years or so. My friend Ryan would be set up there. That was Ryan Humblehorder. And it's a very narrow hallway, but it's enough where you could put a series of tables along one wall, and then people would walk along the other ones. And because Ryan would always have some of the best stuff, he specialized in having the loose vintage Star Wars figures, and he would have something like 5 or 6, 10 blue Snaggletooth figures at one time, and some really rare, you know, droids and Ewoks pieces as well too. And I remember he would have things like, especially from the Power of the Force line, which was such a big line going into the Skywalker saga, the sequels. And he would have something like, you know, 4 or 5 Imperial gunners and some Yak faces and Luke Stormtroopers. And he always had a droids, R2-D2 with a pop-up saber, or the Power of the Force one. So that was always really popular. And that would usually cause a bottleneck in that hallway. Now, it was nice because you could enter the gymnasium from the hallway before you got into that more narrow part. But I just remember spending a lot of my time in that hallway, trying to avoid people as people were walking by, and just spending time with Ryan, going through his collection as well too, and the items that he brought with him in his cases was always interesting. And that's just one of my favorite memories. For a while, they were using this room that was off to the very far right of the building. So you'd walk down that hallway past Ryan's table, and there was this room. It was a small room, but it was large enough that you could put a whole series of rows and tables in there. And they've now converted that into it looks like a martial arts setup, a martial arts room. There are currently, I believe, there are kids that are practicing right now. But there were some really nice moments in that room, too. A lot of times when you go to a toy show, it's the rooms that maybe people don't frequent as much, where, you know, all it takes is for one person to show up with a great table full of items, vintage Star Wars items, you know, to really make your whole day. And that would happen a lot of times in that room. You'd find something special. I remember one time, I believe it's the day that I met Robin Bokra. And then wound up getting into a lot of the Facebook groups that I'm in currently. But I went into that room, and somebody had basically picked up a collection of vintage carded Star Wars figures, and they weren't in great shape. I believe some had been chewed on by mice. I think the one I purchased was. But I had purchased a Return of the Jedi 77 back R5-D4 with a cracked bubble, but it's still sealed for $40. And it's, you know, again, just another nice memory from that. Walking into the venue again here now. And so there's a larger room, as I mentioned, that's for the slot cars, matchbox cars, racing cars, and it's pretty empty right now, but of course that will be filled tomorrow. It's so funny though. We spent so many years here in Parsippany, and then when the pandemic hit, they moved the toy show, when they could have it, and in the capacity that they could have it, to the Police Athletic League building that was across from the Wayne Firehouse, where they would have the monthly Wayne toy show. And we had some really great times there. I remember the first time that we were able to go back to a show, the line to get in was around the door. And you had to wear masks. You know, that's something that we see now, but not as frequently. A lot of times we don't even think about that like we did. But and they limited the capacity. So if they had, you know, 400, 500 people were allowed in, they were, you know, they'd reached capacity, then you had to wait outside. And there were friends that waited, you know, an hour and a half to get in because they were waiting for people, the group that was in and was shopping, to be done. So But it is nice to be back. It's also nice to be back at a point where it's not too crowded, and the aisles aren't filled to capacity, and people aren't trying to get around you to grab something that's in front of you as well, too. So it's just nice to see it that way. It's nice to have this time where it is quiet, just to walk, again, through the hallways and to explore the different gymnasiums and the different rooms. And it's just so funny, too, walking through here. From going here for the last decade, there are these ghosts and specters of different moments that I've had here. And I remember just as I walked past this area on the left, just seeing things like a carded Return of the Jedi Luke X-Wing figure. It was maybe $125, and I thought that was a little high at the time, so I didn't pick it up. And I never actually got one, so it's one that I wish I had been able to pick up. But just little things like that that you remember from a decade of toy hunting in Parsippany, New Jersey, and at ToyCon. One of my favorite memories from ToyCon didn't happen here, but it happened at the Wayne version during the pandemic. I believe it was May of 2021. And it was one of the first times, being a spring show, it was one of the first times all of us were back as collectors and friends. And we had the fortune and the opportunity to hang out for the day and shop the show together. And this was, I think, at the height of the mask wearing and social distancing and everything. But afterwards, we all arranged to go to a restaurant together. And it was this Italian restaurant that our friend Chris Riley had gone to and he raved about, so we all went. It was interesting to see because we had so many people turn out. I want to say we had something like 25 people. And we went to the restaurant, and because we were the only ones there, at first we were going to sit outside, but it was so warm and we were in the sun that they finally, the owner of the restaurant, allowed us to all go in the restaurant and eat, which at the time wasn't something that people were doing. You know, they had converted a lot of the indoor spaces to outdoor spaces because they were concerned with the virus. But since we were the only ones there, we basically took over the entire restaurant. And it was this strange feeling where everyone knew that, you know, there were risks. But at the same time, we just missed doing the normal things that we had done in the past. Like going to shows together and going out to eat. And we stayed there probably, gosh, for like 2 hours or so. And just laughed harder than I can remember. We just really enjoyed it. It was wonderful food, wonderful times all being together, and it felt like a family reunion. I don't have a lot of audio, sadly, from that time because I was just really enjoying myself too much, you know. And there are times where it makes sense to pull out the recorder, and then there are times where you just want to take it all in and maybe talk about it later like I'm doing now. But that was a really special one. Again, one of my favorite memories from ToyCon. And that was spent in the company of the Empire State Club. Another memory I had, and this is where I think ToyCon's really cool because it extends beyond the show itself, was one of the first times I think the show became more than a show, and it really became a meetup for the Empire State Club. And so we had met here in this building, and I want to say it was November of 2018, and then I believe we went out to eat, and afterwards, Robin Bokra, a member of our club, she invited us back to her home to see her collection, which was incredible. And if you know Robin, if you're familiar with her, if you've been in the collecting community for a little while, you know she has an incredible collection. She has, it's all vintage focused, but she has some of the coolest pieces, and you know, a lot of the carded figures she has are ones that she bought in the 1980s, you know, as as a young person, and she kept them all these years sealed, and it was just amazing. So we sat in this in her collection room and just chatted, you know, a whole bunch of us, and that's where I got to meet people and get to really know them. People like Adam Marks. I believe Tyler Fedigan was there as well, and we just, I want to say we had something like maybe 10 or 12 people there. And it just, it was an extension of what turned out to be a really nice day at a toy show. And I think that for us, that was really the first Empire State Club meetup that we had from a toy show, you know, where it was more than just the event itself. And I'll never forget going to her house for the first time, hanging out with everyone, getting to know people more, and then really coming away feeling like I had been on vacation. And, you know, just it was a Star Wars-centered day, but, you know, the friendship's just really built from there. So, again, ToyCon has just delivered a huge amount of blessings, and I look forward to every event like this that we have. Okay, it's 6:40. We have about an hour and 20 minutes until close. You know, a podcast gets official and a toy show gets official when I'm joined by my good buddy, Pete LaRose.
Woohoo! Pete's in the house.
So we were reminiscing about some of the times that we've had over the past 10 years. This is one of the first places that I met you, where you and I really linked up and became friends.
Yeah, it all went downhill from there.
Do you remember where you used to set up, though?
Where I used to set up? Mm-hmm. I used to be right against, in the other room, right against the wall.
In the first gymnasium. So we're in the second one right now. We can see the door. If we went through it and went to the right, was it the right or left? It was right.
I was right to the left when you
Okay.
were.
So if we went to the left,
yep, right
then, and you always had, and I always complimented you on this. You always had an amazing setup. You would bring some of the best vintage stuff. And I used to love, like, you and I would sit and talk outside in front of your booth, and people would just come up to you, especially even dealers who really respect you, and would just look at your stuff and would be like, man, I don't know where you find this stuff, but you have the best stuff.
Yeah, it's always a nice compliment. You know, it's something where, it's like, I've been doing it for many, since probably 94. So yeah, I mean, it's something where you just keep hunting, and you know, you'll have your bad years, you'll have your good years, but yeah, you put enough stuff aside, and you make, when you do the shows, you make sure you have some nice stuff out there, and then people appreciate it. So the other vendors appreciate it, the customers appreciate it, the promoters appreciate it, and it just, you know, it does feel good. It feels good to have people think, you know, just like you said, make those comments. It's a nice feeling.
Yeah, especially at a show like this too, because this is one of the biggest and best toy shows in New Jersey.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You and I have spoken about this too before, but we were talking about some of the finds that we've had over the years, and you mentioned one gentleman's name that really stuck out to me, and that was actually my first memory of ToyCon.
Yeah, that was Jerry. Jerry was a older gentleman, and I forget his wife's name, but really, really sweet couple. Jerry was, I guess, an artist, or he did something in marketing or something where...
He did, and he was also doing comic design. He was trying to design his own comic.
So he would buy... He had bought a bunch of toys from the 80s.
60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah.
Kept it all down his basement and was hoarding this stuff. He said to his wife that she had wanted to get married, and he said, I will marry you. They were living in an apartment. And he said, I will marry you, and I'll buy you a house. But I want the basement has to be for my toys. And she agreed, and it was in love at that point. So.
I mean, that's great. I mean, if he had that arrangement, I mean, I personal feeling on that is, hey, the whole house is mine. Like, take it or leave it. But, you know, that's why it's just me and my daughter.
Exactly. No, but he stocked his basement. And so the first ToyCon ever was June of 2014. So a decade ago. This is the 10th anniversary, and he just brought a whole bunch of stuff.
It's very taxing knowing you for 10 years, David.
It really is. I know. I feel for you.
I mean, in 10 years, it's just like everything's going downhill.
As someone who is me, I feel for you.
Multiple doctor appointments. This, that. It's just now it's all coming. You know, it all makes sense. It's it does.
I drain you. I understand.
Yes.
I know. Mentally, emotionally, spiritually, I got it. But we. So Jerry did his first show here, And I think it was a total shock because nobody really expected him. Nobody knew he was coming.
He brought some amazing things that you just don't see. And it was
what kind of stuff?
Carded Star Wars like all day long. I mean, it was just
and he had stuff for like $40, $60.
There's Thundercats, Tiger Sharks.
And a lot of this was dead mint stuff too.
Oh, yeah, no,
like the
really
carded
nice
figures,
the
there weren't any issues with
a lot
the
of oddball toy lines. Like a lot of things that you just don't see. He didn't have quantity of each individual piece. Like almost like one, maybe two of each for the most part. But he had a lot of those lines that you just don't see show up at shows. So it was a nice sigh of relief. It kind of definitely hurt the wallet. But I gotta say, his prices. Early on, his prices were really, really fair, and you know it was one of those areas where I kind of had talked to him and his wife, and he was really being unfortunately taken advantage of by people. I've always been under the belief: look, if you're paying a really cheap price and it's a good price itself, you don't haggle; you pay it, and you're grateful. Unfortunately, a lot of people were haggling, trying to get things even cheaper, and it just. That's to me. That's just dirty pool. Yeah. You don't do that. That's not how you.
And everything he had was sealed. It was in good condition.
Yeah, no, it was great stuff.
I remember people were haggling with him and trying to get him down on things like the Bone Age figures.
Unfortunately, that's what happens sometimes. You know, and you know, we're here in Jersey. We're close to New York. You have that also that personality type in this tri-state area that you know you haggle. I mean, that's just part of the game. I just growing up in the country. I was more under the understanding where if it's a good deal, you just take it,
yeah.
And you move on. You don't, no.
Yeah.
But
it never hurts to ask, but at the same time, like...
If it's cheap enough, paying a quarter of what the item's worth, you don't haggle. You don't try to get it cheaper. You just pay it, and you move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
But Jerry was awesome. Jerry was an awesome guy. You know, I haven't seen him in years.
No.
I mean, they was definitely a very, very sweet couple. His wife was very, at first, kind of standoffish, but once you started talking to her, she was as sweet as could be.
I think she was more concerned because she wanted to make sure that Jerry got the prices.
Which is understandable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah, she was definitely very nice.
Zero issues with any of them. They were amazing people.
And Jerry was fascinating because, again, I think he... You might be right. He might have been into marketing, but then he was also trying to create his own comic books. And I remember going to his house and having him show me the work that he did. And he'd gotten really far on the stuff. He had a designer's eye and a mind for it. He was very creative. He was somebody who was always doing something. But it was nice to meet him at the first ToyCon. And if that was your first impression, especially with seeing something like what Jerry had, and Jerry had like two or three tables, and they just stacked with stuff. Like I had never seen that much stuff knew about.
It was nuts. Yeah, I saw you. I'm like, who is this guy trying to weasel in and get stuff?
No. I was thrilled. Seriously, I mean, he had figures, and he would just give me, I don't know if you remember this, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but he wrote all of the prices on note cards and then put a hole through it and then put a bolt through it. And so if you went to him and said, hey, how much is this Transformers pieces Marvel Training Center, he would have to go through a stack that was probably like 2 or 3 inches high of note cards, like hundreds of note cards to find that. And it would take like 15 minutes. But I remember looking at some of his stuff, pulling a thing together, you know, just maybe like 6 or 7 items, and then having him give me a price, and it was incredible at the time.
He had great stuff. He had great prices. It's a shame that, you know, I think he ended up getting taken advantage of later on by some other people, unfortunately. But I wish he would have just held out and kept coming to the shows. But hey, to each their own. You know,
yeah.
it's part of the. Throughout the,
he did come back, though, to numerous toy cons, yeah, for a while, which was really nice. And I know that he made a lot of people happy, which was great. But, yeah, wish he could have kept coming.
I still have a few pieces in my collection that came from him. So a couple of my carded Tiger Sharks and just miscellaneous things. So, yeah, no, absolutely. That's one person where I can honestly say that I wish I could run into them again at the show. And not even as a vendor, more of as just as somebody walking around. So I would love to just kind of... shake his hand, give his wife a hug. I just haven't seen him in a while. So,
yeah.
Good people.
And you were telling me when we were talking about we were reminiscing before, and we were talking about, you know, the times that...
That was until you told me it was 10 years, and that's where I met you. And absolutely. That just ruined the whole movie.
Well, I think we might have met, actually, at the Wayne Toy Show.
No,
and
it was
then
here.
It was here?
It
where
was
we,
here.
Okay.
Yep.
We became friends here, I know that.
I hid that memory, but you brought it up, and it kind of... Yeah, it definitely... Yep.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of times because you are a dealer at the shows, you're unable to come out for lunch with us.
Right.
And there was one time you were telling me, there was one time you reminded me that you came out with us. It was probably 2021, I think it was.
I had my daughter Audrey with me.
And it was when ToyCon was in the Wayne location.
Wayne, yes. It was, I forget, we went to some Irish pub and my daughter was there and one of the other members of the New York Empire State Club was there with his son. And
how old was your daughter at the time?
Five. So
I think he was around the same age.
They're all like perfect age. They were the same age, probably same grade and all. And
super sweet kids.
Oh no, zero. His dad was awesome. He was awesome. But it was just funny that at dinner or lunch, whatever. His son, both kids were coloring, and his son was trying to be nice and I guess impress my daughter, and he colored her this whatever's on the placemat, he colored it and handed it to her.
It was very smooth.
It was ever very smooth. I gotta give him to it. Like Jim and I looked at each other and you know, it was more of a, you know, kind of like, wow, that's kind of funny. Obviously it's innocent, whatever, but my daughter was very, I gotta say, I kind of, looking back, I laugh and I'm like, I'm very proud of her. She literally had wanted nothing to do with it. She couldn't be more rude. She basically looked at me, rolled her eyes, shoved the paper aside, and I had said to her, I was like, Audrey, I was like, he gave it to you as a gift. That was very nice. She's like, it doesn't look nice, or something to that effect. And I said, well, it's okay. He colored it for you. She's like, he scribbled, like really attitude-wise. And Jim's son was like, well, I was trying to hurry up. I was trying to get it done quickly for you. And she looked dead in his eyes, and she's like, when I rush, I can still color within the lines. And to the point where his dad and I looked at each other, and I was like, I got nothing.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you say?
Check, please.
As anybody who has kids, there's always those moments when they say something, and you're just like, ah, crap. Like, there's nothing I can... Like,
and nothing's changed. She's still the same.
And she's still the same way. I felt so bad, because his son was so nice.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well... Kid, I'm sure that's not going to be the last time that happens to you. Audrey, you're... Yeah.
She's good to go. She knows. She knows who she is.
She has a little bit of your mother in you. So
it's funny, though, because, I mean, we're standing here in the middle of the toy show right now, and, again, we've had great times here. We've had a lot of times here, when you think about it, twice a year for the last 10 years. But also, like, and we've had great finds,
mm-hmm.
but it's moments like that where it's just hanging out in front of somebody's booth or something, you know, like that during a meal, which is, it means a lot, so.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely found some really good stuff here, but, like, you had asked me, like, what some good finds, and it just blends together. I mean, I remember buying some boxed Monster High stuff, some carded Star Wars, stuff from Jerry was amazing. Some of that stuff that I still had, it's just been so many finds over the years that it's just a lot of money. A lot of money going out.
Well, and it's nice, too, because did they originally have set up the day before?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yep. From what I remember, it was always Friday afternoon, evening, and then Saturday morning. So I always try to get down Friday. Not stressing Saturday morning, but it also gives you time to kind of walk around and see what the other vendors have. And, you know, I generally what I bring to shows I am not in love with. If I bring it to the show, unless it's in a showcase, if I bring it to the show, I'm willing to let it go. I don't care. Mm-hmm. So it gives me time to walk around as well and see what people price things at and make sure that, you know, I always try to set my prices way under what retail is online. And I just make sure that I am the cheapest by far in the room, and that usually does.
And you've had other vendors come by right now, because you have some Super 7 stuff, and people have been shocked at the prices that you have this, which is nice. But
it's, you know, again, when you've been in it for a while, you make connections, and sometimes those connections in time pay off. And it gives you an opportunity to buy things at a discounted rate, especially more modern stuff. And hey, you know, if I can get it cheap, I don't need to make what it's going for online when I sell it for the show. And I think that's the biggest, it's one of the biggest issues with the shows these days, is you come to a show and people have the same exact price you see them on eBay or on Amazon. They're pricing it exactly the same, and that's
Except the problem is we, as people who are shopping, are paying cash.
Right. To me, that's just stupidity. It's more, look, if I can sell it for $100 online, and I'm now paying fees, I'm paying this, I'm paying that, so it's going to be $75 to $80 of the show, if not a little cheaper, just to move it. Like, I don't have to worry about boxing it up. I don't have to worry about sending it. It just makes sense. Unfortunately, I think nowadays at shows, you see, years ago, it was a lot of, I don't know, it's a different personality. Nowadays, you have, it's a lot of the vendors are these fly-by-night vendors, where they have the same exact stuff you see in Target and Walmart, and they're kind of trying to scalp stuff, and they're trying to get those top dollar, and it just doesn't, that's not, unfortunately, those are the people you see come and go in the hobby, and there's been so many vendors that come and gone. There's very few, like, you could walk through the room, there's very few vendors that have been doing it since the 90s, you know? I mean, I can think of, in our hobby, vendors that have been doing it from the 90s, and maybe on one hand, maybe two hands, on names that are still in it.
Maybe even from the past decade.
Yeah, there's very few. There's very few. You know, I just quickly thinking there's like four or five names that come to mind that I'm great friends with, but we've been in it back in the trenches. You know, back in the days when we were finding stuff, it was stuff that was still undocumented a lot of times. But there's very few of us that are collectors and vendors that are still doing that. You know, a lot of collectors are still in it, but very few vendors. The vendors come and go.
Yeah, right. I think because it's also, it's harder to get items.
Oh, it's much,
in inventory.
It's much more difficult to find things now. And you got to pay more. I mean, the prices that we have to pay now to get stuff is ridiculous. You know, but a lot of us old timers have, when I say old timers, in a nice manner. I mean, we've sat on a lot of merchandise too. We've put things away.
Yeah.
We've bought stuff in quantity years ago, and we just threw it in boxes, and now we're, you know, breaking that stuff out. It's not stuff.
And
that
I think what you just said, I think that differentiates you from a lot of, as you said, the fly by night amateur dealers and vendors that have popped up, because you're willing. It's almost like with purchasing stocks. Like, you're willing to buy a good company and then just to kind of sit on it for a while.
So my thought process, and it could be looked as a hoarding thought process, though. When I buy collections, I sell the junk first. I know what I paid for the collection. I sell the junk out that I don't want. I sell just enough to get my investment back. And then the rest of it, at that point, I didn't pay anything for it. It's now in my possession. To me, it's free.
Right.
I have no motivation to sell it unless
some of it goes into your collection.
Some of it goes into collections. Most of it just goes in boxes. And when I bring it out, I bring it out. So, I mean, that's one thing. You know, I'm not looking. A lot of people they try to squeak the highest dollar you can out of something. It's all about the money, money, money. In the hobby, you know, when you're doing this as a side kind of gig and it's just fun, you're not worried about the ultimate dollar. And, you know, at that point, you can give really good deals to people. And you can see the happiness you bring to people when you're not, it's not your livelihood. You know, a lot of people have always asked me, why don't you do this as a full-time job? And I make great money doing it if I wanted to, but I don't want to rely on it. You know, it's not, at that point, it's not fun.
Right.
So it's the fact that I can pick it up, put it down, and not look at it for a couple months at a time if I want. And that just makes sense. I mean, to me, that makes sense. It's also something that, you know, if I want to pick up when I'm, you know, in my late 50s and I want to stop working instead of having to wait to 65 or 67 or whatever, I can do this for a few years and I can, you know what, I don't have to do the daily job somewhere. I can do this for fun and make decent money.
Yeah.
At the same point, though, the biggest thing is just bringing joy to people's faces and seeing the happiness with them and seeing how something that you found at a flea market or a yard sale or you just had for years and years, it's something that somebody's been looking for, and it's just, I don't know, something about that is just nice.
One of my favorite things standing on this hardwood floor has been over the last 10 years to stand at your booth, getting to know you, talking to you, building up a friendship that we have now, but also getting to see people come up to your table and either with you know, total surprise, seeing something that they connect immediately to their childhood, or looking at a piece that they've never seen before. That's just, it always really struck me because you always bring different things. I never see the same, you know, batch of items twice with you.
Yeah, you got to rotate your inventory. That's the biggest thing. Like a lot of vendors, again, a lot of them are the, I call them the fly by night. You know, you see them at multiple shows, they have the exact same inventory. And it's just, that's not how, I don't know, that just, to me, that's not cool.
Yeah.
It just gets boring. Why do I want to keep seeing you? Why am I going to come to the show to see your table? So it just,
and you have decades of doing this, so you've built up and amassed a collection of.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, like right now, we're standing behind your table, right? And you have the the Batman from Batman Returns, the Batcave Command Center, which is a pretty big piece. You have some classic Star Trek stuff. You have the Care Bear Cousins that are still in their boxes. You have a really cool piece, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about this because it is a special one, but you have Super 7 recently, right, this past year?
Within the last year or two, yeah.
They just put out their version of the Thunder Tank. It has, on the front of it, it has the original... An original piece of art with that's reminiscent of the original Thundercats tank on it, and it has Slythe and Mumra, and you know, in the driver's seat you have Lino and Panthor. Is it Panthor?
Lino, Panthor.
Mm-hmm.
You have in the back you have Chitara, Tigra, Pumaira.
Yep.
So Thundercats, yeah, it was a toy line from the 80s. LJN did it back in the day. I loved it. It's one of my favorite toy lines. But yeah, Super 7 recently redid the figures in 6-inch scale. Four Horsemen did a lot of the sculpts for them early on, but they did a lot of the production of the figures for them. And yeah, a lot of the earlier stuff is really, 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 really nice. Mattel had picked up the line. Super 7 took over the line when Mattel gave up the license. So this is a Thunder Tank. It's in a damaged box. Retail on it was somewhere in the 300-ish, 250 to 300, maybe a little more. I was able to pick it up at a reasonable price. Right now, they go online in perfect condition, $300 to $400. This one here, the box is a little damaged, but the toy is unused. It's unopened in the box, so I priced it at $200. I mean, it's the cheapest you're going to find, but that's just an example of what I'm saying. When you come to the shows, you can't try to price it at retail pricing. It just doesn't make sense.
And you're probably the only person who has this here. On top of it is it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, another Super 7 piece with Charlie Brown in his little sheet with the black holes on it.
Yep.
The black dots on it.
It's a cool piece. It's like a big, about an 18-inch vinyl. Just a neat looking piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I tried to bring a variety. Bring more of the vintage stuff tomorrow. Today I brought a lot of the miscellaneous modern Super 7, some Ultimates. I was able to pick up at a fair price. So if I can, you know, if I can sell them under retail, under wholesale to people, you know, I'm making money. Let people enjoy the discount.
Tell me about this very large, thin cardboard piece that you have here with a bright orange sticker on it, because that's wheelhouse.
That's a really nice piece. It's actually a really big piece of cardboard. It's got a bright orange sticker, and it's just really thin.
That's it, right?
That's it. So that's a Hasbro toy display, a Star Wars toy display from, I think it was 96. I think it was 96, 97-ish. It's a two-piece display. The space scene, I think it was a Millennium Falcon, a couple of TIE fighters just flying through space. So I think it would have been like a Toys R Us or something similar. Fold-out display. So yeah, I got a couple of those a couple of years back from a person who used to have a toy shop in Jersey who still had some old stock in a storage unit. He called me up. Remember, I used to buy all the time. And I ended up buying a few, I think it was like 7 or 8 of these displays from him. But it's just something that's, you know, if somebody's looking for it, great. If not, it's an inch thick. It's not that big. I can put it back in the attic and save it for the next person.
And it says on it, Hasbro Toy Star Wars display sign set up by December 3rd, 1996, which means that it's pretty much within about the first year, year and a half, that the figures were released.
Yeah, I believe it was the Power of the Force 2 display. It's got the Trilogy Edition logo on there. So, yeah, it was definitely a cool piece. It's got the Kenner name on it still, even though the outside said Hasbro.
Mm-hmm.
It actually had the display actually has the Kenner name. That was during the transitional period. And I believe it hung from Toys R Us above a.
So it says Toys R Us. There's an instruction
book. Oh, yeah, it actually does. Yep.
And then it looks like there are 4 notches on the top, so you would just with chains you would hang it at the very top of the shelf.
Yep.
That's
probably
right.
About a 8-foot shelf, mm-hmm. give or take.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
It's a great piece. And again, these are all pieces that you just, no matter what, you're not going to pretty much see any of them on any other table here, which is, again, it makes it just really interesting. I always love the fact that you bring such cool pieces as well, too. And this is certainly one, if you're an early modern collector, this is a
huge display. Right, it's one of those pieces that trying to get it out and display it is a little tough, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also the fact that you have the original shipper as well, too, that's a nice piece. As we were talking, I just thought of another memory as well, too. So we have another mutual friend named Jerry as well. He owns a toy shop.
Yes.
And there was a time where
Jerry Maria.
Yes.
Tinkerbee Toys.
Tinkerbee Toys.
In Trenton area? Or they're in Jersey.
They're in Jersey, yeah. But they have a really nice shop, too. You and I went there once. But
three people.
I was here on a Saturday morning before the early bird opened. I think I came in with you. And they had an original skiff. I believe it was complete. And I think they were only asking something like $130 for it, $150, and I passed on it because I'm an idiot.
You are an idiot.
Right, even if I didn't tell you that story.
10 years of knowing you, yes. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that statement.
So you're not too far from this place.
No, right? My house is about an hour and a half north. Not too bad.
Okay.
Yep. Straight up the thruway, so it's not a horrible drive.
Why have you come back to ToyCon year after year? Because you've pretty much done it almost every time, right? I mean, you've missed maybe a handful.
Yeah, I missed a few here and there. You know, it's the last few years I've missed a few just because, you know, sometimes weekends don't. Yeah, time-wise, it doesn't add up right with my daughter and stuff. So I want to make sure I always, you know, if I have to choose between a toy show and her, it's obviously she's gonna be here.
Wrong decision.
Yeah, this is a show that there's a few shows I do that she comes with me. They're a little smaller. This is a show that I wouldn't feel comfortable with her walking around
right. Without
me knowing what's going on. So it all depends on the work schedule. It depends on my daughter. It's a lot of different things. But
when you're able to do one, why do you constantly come back to this one?
It's local. They get a good crowd. There's always a really good crowd here. I always do fairly well. It's not that far of a drive. It just makes sense.
Is there anything that you hope to find this weekend?
I'm at a point where there's very little that I believe I'm going to find here for myself. And a lot of us older collectors are in that mindset. Chances are there's nothing I'm going to find here. If I do find anything to buy, it's more of a I just wanted to buy something kind of buy versus something I really want. You know, for me, right now I'm looking for some sealed box G.I. Joes from the 60s. I know I'm not going to find them here. I'm looking for some outer spacemen from the 60s, from Colorforms. I know I'm not going to find it here. And then some original artwork and prototype stuff, which I know I'm not going to find here. So there's very little that I actually expect to find here. But you know what? Hey, if I happen to find some neat little piece or some oddball piece of merchandise that fits my collection, then so be it.
And you and I have the rest of the night to shop, and then tomorrow morning we'll be able to look and hunt for stuff and hopefully find some stuff as well too.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully tomorrow's just less than half the vendors are set up, so hopefully tomorrow we can definitely find some stuff. We'll see.
So I'm really glad I got to talk to Pete tonight, standing at his booth again. And he's right. That's, you know, really, in these gyms, that's where he and I became friends, and that's where we met. And I think it's amazing because when you get into this hobby, you start collecting because you like the items, you like the action figures, you grew up with them. And then you start to really get to know the vendors, the people who frequent the shows, and then who are part of, you know, the clubs and who are in the same circles. And that's really what happened with Pete and me, and that's where our friendship, you know, developed. So it really started in this spot. It's nice to finally be able to come back here and to celebrate, you know, the 10th anniversary, as I mentioned earlier, which I just love. I can't believe it's been 10 years. I do remember my first time that I was here also getting a blue Snaggletooth figure, and I wish I could remember the price. I'm going to say it was probably around $175 from a friend of mine named Nino, and I think I probably picked up two or three of them from him over the years, but that was a big get, you know, in 2014, and so just another memory. Okay, so it is 8:30. Mark Huckabone came and joined us. Mark, say hi.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. So, have you had any interesting finds at ToyCon over the years?
Yes, I have. I bought a full booth of newer stuff. I found some cool old toys.
When you say a full booth of newer stuff, what kind of stuff did you buy?
Like from 90s to 2010.
How many pieces? Thousands?
No, hundreds. Okay. Yep. So comics stuff. So yeah, I always find good stuff here. It's a good store. It's a good show to buy and sell.
I hope you have a wonderful time tomorrow and Sunday at the show. It should be a really good one.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for helping.
Absolutely.
All right, get on safe. Right. I'll see you in the morning.
Thank you for being a part of this look back at a decade of ToyCon NJ. Unfortunately, due to illness, I was unable to go back to Parsippany on Saturday or Sunday. It's been a week since the event, and I'm still sick. But I'm thankful to have been there with Pete and Mark and the other vendors that Friday night. I spoke to Pete during that weekend, and he gave me updates on the show. Regardless of the storm we had on Saturday, collectors braved the rough weather conditions and showed up, ready to shop and to buy toys. Pete said Saturday stayed relatively busy until 2:30, which is the sign of a solid show. He echoed what many other collectors have said about the toy shows this winter and spring, that attendance has been good and that people are spending again. And maybe that is a sign of good things to come for the rest of the year, if the momentum continues. But Pete did very well at the show. And he and his daughter were both sick this week, too. The spring can be a rough time, but it only gets better from here. And here's to another decade of moments and memories at ToyCon NJ. And as always, I'll continue to report live from this show and from many others on Star Wars, prototypes, and production.